I have the pleasure now of talking to one of the most listenable and one of the most popular broadcasters in America for many, many years, Tom Joyner. Tom, so many things are happening today that we need a person like you to help us understand what's happening. Many, many people do not understand what has been going on out in Colorado. So I'm just going to turn the microphone over to you, and you tell me exactly what is happening here in America.
I'll do it, and I'll get to Colorado in a moment. A couple of things. We have so much today to talk about. Barack Obama advised Chris Wallace on television this weekend that he had not spoken to the FBI about Hillary Clinton's emails. Barack Obama was, at that time, speaking to the FBI. He knew the FBI would be advised if they weren't already listening to what he had to say. And by Obama coming out and saying that he believed that Clinton was innocent, should not have the FBI on her case, that is Obama personified. Now, Bruce Springsteen just canceled a concert in Greensboro because he feels that North Carolinians, Carolinians should not be compelled to to accept males in women's restrooms and locker rooms. Apparently, Springsteen has no problem with reneging on a contract that he willfully signed to appear in Greensboro. But he seeks to impose his will upon the rest of us on the transgender bathroom issue. And that's what it is, a bathroom issue. Our morality should not be for sale. We should never bow to pressure from a liberal community where debauchery is a sign of civil rights. There is no civil right allowing men into women's bathroom privacy. I've said before that if a man or woman feels that they are of the opposite sex, take the steps necessary to match your sex anatomy to that sex. In that case, feel free to enter. But to demand entrance to areas with women and children undressed or partially undressed while you are not part of that sex physically is wrong. The LGBT population makes a lot of noise, thanks to clueless liberals who protest with them. But in reality, they make up just 3.8% of the population. 96.2% of Americans are not part of the LGBT community. Only 0.3% of Americans are transsexuals, leaving the other 99.7% of us to wonder how 0.3% of the population places demands upon the rest. Is there any part of the North Carolina House bill that someone is concerned about? Yes. Should we look at it? Should we consider whether or not some edits may be justified? Yes. But to demand, as the Charlotte City Council did, that we must allow men into women's restrooms is overreaching and it's ignorant. It's not just the transgenders who are people who are heartfelt as to what they believe their gender is. It opens the door to every pervert that wants to come in. You no longer need a raincoat to flash at people. Already, the University of Toronto has experienced perverts taking advantage of the law by exposing themselves in women's restrooms, and they're moving to stop it on their campus. The danger of young children being assaulted or traumatized in an area that should be off limits to their abusers is real. What's next? Incest? Adult sex with children? There are already calls for both from a morally charged liberal community. For those who think that this could never happen, how many of you thought that you'd see a day when men in women's restrooms and locker rooms would confront us? Can we not see that each step towards a moral decline brings us closer to the end of civilization? Apparently, William Barber, I will not refer to him as a reverend, the head of the NAACP in North Carolina, favors allowing men to invade the privacy of women's restrooms. Last week, he tried to tie this perversion into a racial issue as well as a civil right. But don't believe that the majority of blacks in North Carolina want their mothers, wives, and daughters to be exposed to men in the privacy of a lady's bathroom. Barber seems to believe that he gets to force his opinions upon the majority, blacks and whites, and he's threatened to hold his protests at the General Assembly unless his demands for House Bill 2 to be reversed is met. I repeat, no one has a civil right to use the bathroom of the opposite sex. If Barber can show me in the Bible where Jesus insisted upon men exposing themselves amid a group of women answering nature's call, I'll revisit my opinion. But until then, Barber and his liberal lackeys should just zip it up. Now, the News and Observer today, and all of the news media, has Donald Trump crying foul after Ted Cruz managed to grab all of Colorado's Republican delegates due to a maneuver by the establishment in the Colorado Republican Party. Now, I'm not going to side with Trump or Cruz on this, but I will simply tell you that what happened in Colorado was legal, and it should tell us all about a corrupt political system in America. A post appeared on the Republican Party site in Colorado proclaiming that we did it, stopped Trump. It was hastily taken down, but it shows that this was a deliberate effort by the establishment to prevent Trump from being the nominee of the party. That's a position that should be determined by the voters and not by political hacks. Having said that, politics are far different from business deals, and Trump has relied upon his personality to gain delegates and not bother to put together a ground game as Cruz did. It is only now that Trump has brought in a political heavy hitter to try and establish that ground game. A run for the presidency of the United States demands that the candidate know the ins and outs of such a candidacy. One cannot simply cry foul when outmaneuvered in a given state. Trump is right that our political system is rotten to the core and needs to be changed. But if you're going to suit up and play in the big leagues, you'd better have the political savvy to win. It's not enough to complain about something that is entirely legal under this rotten system after the fact. Trump has obviously had great success in business dealings, but in politics, while you're trying to make a deal, the other guy is making off with your ride home. Know the rules, and which rules are subject to change. The people of America have allowed career politicians to rig the system so that the establishment can control who wins or loses. The ultimate losers in that scenario are the hardworking, tax-paying Americans who are forced to financially support a massive con game. I will say this, it has become very apparent that the establishment in the Republican Party or Democrat Party does not want anybody to clean up their nasty little playground. They've spent a lot of years devising a system that allows them, rather than the voters, to maintain control. Bernie Sanders is a loony socialist, but he is right about one thing. Special interests, big money interests, control the politics of our country. For liberal America, the liberal media and the establishment politicians of both parties to go to the lengths that they're going to keep Trump from rattling their cage from the Oval Office, it should tell us that those cages need to be rattled. Once these forces block Trump, they will then turn on Ted Cruz. Anyone who promises to buck the system is fair game to these political vultures. Unless we demand change, the question that has been asked in previous political campaigns remains. Who will answer that 3 a.m. call? And that answer is the same old deaf ears. Last Tuesday, the voters of Wisconsin made their voices heard. They chose Trump over Cruz by about 13 points. Whether you like Donald Trump or not, it is amazing to me that he is as popular among voters as he is, given the massive resistance against him by the mainstream media, Republican establishment leaders, and the lies and half-truths from Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. I personally believe that Trump has, of course, been too bombastic in his statements, but in today's world of gutter politics, those who try to stay out of the gutter eventually lose. Jeb Bush had to get down into the gutter after a reasonable approach early on, but it was too late. Rubio kept his campaign out of the gutter early on, but dove headfirst into it when that approach did not work. Fiorino, Huckabee, Carson, you name them. They all failed when they tried a reasonable approach. Having blasted his way to the front, Trump now has got to ease off the rhetoric and show that he can be presidential. If not, he too will fail. As the Democrat argument that Trump doesn't understand foreign policy and that Hillary has the experience, I find that to be laughable. Barack Obama came in with no foreign policy experience, and after 7 years, he has shown that he still has no grasp of foreign policy. Hillary served a term in the Senate and less than a term as Secretary of State, a position she was appointed to by Barack Obama in a calculated political move. In her position at State, Hillary's record is one of incompetence and financial greed. Professional paid protesters and the gullible college-age people who follow them fail to realize that Bernie Sanders proposes to take up to 90% in taxes from their paychecks, and that leaves them with 10 cents out of every dollar they earn. Now, if you think that paying your bills is tough now, try doing it with 10 cents on every dollar you earn. The problem, of course, is that the professional paid protesters don't worry about paychecks, and the useful idiots who follow them won't realize how wrong they were until they earn a paycheck. I remember well a young college graduate who I hired at my Raleigh radio station, Oldies 100.7. It was 1991, and she was paid $24,000 a year to start. When her first paycheck was issued, she came into my office in tears. She told me I had promised her $2,000 a month, but her check was for much less. It was only then that this college graduate learned about taxes. Today on college campuses, protesting students call for the college to pay employees more money and other perks. But when an increase in tuition is proposed, they are traumatized. Somebody else is supposed to pay for these expenses, you see, not the gullible people with the protest placards. That lunacy is playing itself out at Duke University. 9 young students trespassed onto a campus office with demands that they were not there to learn, but to teach. A 19-year-old spokeswoman, 19, sputtered nonsense before the TV cameras covering the event. Duke should be ashamed to have allowed this madness to continue. Hillary Clinton is now on record as saying that a child in the womb has no constitutional rights. A child? It can be slaughtered up until seconds before its birth in Hillary's world. Moreover, Democrat leader Debbie Wasserman Schultz has said that she agrees and that killing the child after birth is acceptable. The patriot Thomas Paine said this, "To argue with a person who has renounced the use of reason is like administering medicine to the dead." So it is with liberals. As for Donald Trump, he has been his own worst enemy by far. Trump's message resonated with voters who are angry at the political system, and he could have ridden that anger to an easy win. But the Donald just cannot accept that he is not above criticism, that everybody who disagrees with him isn't an idiot or a fat pig. His daily tweets of counterattacks have grown old. Time is now short for Trump to show that he can be presidential, or his legacy will be one of aiding and abetting the election of Hillary Clinton and the final nail in the coffin of the United States. The truth is, neither political party has the confidence of the American people because of their corruption and greed. Public service is a joke. They are in it for the money, the power, and the prestige, not public service. Moving on, hatred is demeaning to human dignity for both the hater and the hated. Yet, as abhorrent as hate speech is, it is not necessarily a criminal act. Hate speech that calls for violence, murdering, terrorizing, enslaving, or torturing of any individual or group is a criminal act. Given that it's a criminal act, we're left to wonder why Barack Obama and his Justice Department have not arrested criminals like Louis Farrakhan, who call for 10,000 black men to stalk and kill white people, Al Sharpton, who's called upon black people to kill white crackers, and especially the pigs, meaning law enforcement, the heads of the new Black Panther Party and Black Lives Matter, who have called for violence, murder, and terrorizing white people. There are more of these criminals, but since these four have done this publicly without punishment from Obama's Justice Department, it is proof of incompetence by the Obama administration. Let somebody like David Duke or a Ku Klux Klansman utter even one harsh word and the liberal media and the Justice Department showers down on them with outrage. This is racism at the highest levels, and it's dangerous. Obama was a community organizer in Chicago, and in the first 3 months of 2016, Chicago has seen an increase in shooting over last year of 88%. Democrats have ruled Chicago for decades, and it is one of the most dangerous cities in the world. If you need money to fuel hate, go to Craigslist, where $15 an hour is being offered to those who sign up to Black Lives Matter protests and to block Donald Trump's right to free speech. The communist and socialist forces like George Soros pay the money, and the ignorant liberals and lowlifes among us take the money and join the anarchy. Anybody who thinks these protests are some spontaneous thing or fueled by anything other than the desire to destroy America is delusional. These are paid professional protesters, many of whom don't even know why they're protesting. But the liberal mainstream media puts them forth as some kind of real protest, rather than the useful idiots they are. And remember, these useful idiots vote. Now, I did not invent the term useful idiots. Vladimir Lenin and Joseph Stalin first used the term to describe sympathizers in the West who blindly support communist leaders. Lenin also said this, "The goal of socialism is communism." Bernie Sanders is a proud socialist. Lenin also said, "Give me one generation of your youth and I'll transform the whole world." Our safeguard has always been our Constitution. Who could imagine that we would ever have had over 56 million useful idiots who elected a man raised by communists and socialists to the presidency of the United States? Look at the shape our country is in. Skyrocketing debt. A failing public school system that politicians will not address because of union opposition. An out-of-control Federal Reserve. Government expanding by an alarming rate. The Constitution being trampled on. The Bill of Rights being ignored. Special interest groups catering to open borders that invite terrorists in. The judicial system making law. Our business tax rate, the highest in the world. Every citizen being overtaxed except for the 50% who pay no tax at all. Political correctness is shutting down any opposition to this madness. The list goes on. Winston Churchill said this, "Socialism is a philosophy of failure, the creed of ignorance, and the gospel of envy. Its inherent virtue is the equal sharing of misery." Equality trumps all in socialism. Did I tell you that Bernie Sanders is a socialist and Hillary Clinton is close behind? Progressives like Hillary Clinton want control, big government, dumbed-down voters, no private property, no guns, except, of course, for criminals who don't register their guns. A liberal wants political correctness, gay marriage, men in women's bathrooms, liberal school systems, and no moral standards. What do we expect when we allow the destruction of the Constitution, the rewriting of the Bible, and removing the foundation of our republic, Christianity? Consider the difference in American leadership. Barack Obama said that we are no longer a Christian nation. George Washington said, "Do not let anyone claim to be a true American if they ever attempt to remove religion from politics." Do you favor Washington? Or do you favor Obama? We borrow or print money to continue our socialist programs. We allow public education and universities to turn our children into leftists. Even now, parents pay for their children to obtain nearly worthless degrees in gender studies and things like conflict management and other inane projects. Sadly, 60% of degrees in math, science, and engineering are awarded to foreign exchange students who generally return to their home countries with their newfound skills and expertise. Does all of this not make college protesters useful idiots? Now, the term useful idiots refers to brainwashed liberals and leftists the world over, usually college students that aren't necessarily idiots, but just misinformed, naive, and ignorant of facts due to being indoctrinated with liberal socialist propaganda through their public education. They've been taught to believe that George Bush has committed more crimes against humanity than leftist darlings like Yasser Arafat, Bin Laden, Chairman Mao, and Fidel Castro, and who still defend communism, the cause of over 100 million deaths to this day. Useful idiots are racial agitators, the media, most professors in our colleges and universities, like the communist Bill Ayers, the NEA, and many public education teachers, radical environmentalists, and radical feminists. That's why I used the term useful idiots, because that's what they are. We cannot discuss hate without looking at Islam and Barack Obama's obedience to it. Obama insists that Islam is a religion of peace and that he considers the Muslim call to prayer to be the most beautiful thing he has ever heard. He insists upon refraining from calling radical Islamic terrorists Islamic terrorists. Let's look at the facts a second. These radical savages still live in the 7th century. They follow the Quran, they're devout Muslims, they worship Allah above all else in their lives. They use extreme violence to back their cause. Why does that not make them Islamic extremists? Now, one can argue that their view of Islam is not necessarily mainstream, but it cannot be argued that they are not Islamic terrorists. And yet, Obama cannot bring himself to name this movement for what it is. Obama was born of a Muslim father, raised by Muslims, exposed to education in Indonesia, where extremism is taught, along with hatred for the United States. He was mentored by communist Muslims, elevated in Chicago to a status of community organizer, other words for extreme agitator. He hung out with the dregs of Chicago society and with people like Bill Ayers and his wife Bernadine Dorn, who were responsible for murders and bombings in the liberal movement of the 1960s, and who lied to the American people, Obama did, about his scant knowledge of these people. To gain the presidency, Obama's entire history was sealed away. We know nothing about his past. We know nothing about the unsavory characters who reinvented Obama, altered public documents, and hid his past drug history, sexual preferences, a record that has been sealed, and a record that would not have allowed any candidate not of color to even survive a primary. The Obama administration has brought in many members of the Muslim Brotherhood, some in sensitive areas like Homeland Security. I'll explain the Muslim Brotherhood to you a bit later in another commentary. Suffice to say that there is every reason to believe that Barack Obama is the best American friend that radical Islam has. Where Islam is dominant, as in the Middle East and Pakistan, religious minorities, especially Christians and Jews, suffer brutal persecution, while the world, including Obama, looks the other way. Where Islam is in the minority, as in Thailand, the Philippines, and Europe, there is the threat of violence. If Muslim demands are not met, the reasons are obvious and begin with the Quran, the Bible of Islam. Few verses of the Quran can be construed to fit the contemporary virtues of religious tolerance and universal brotherhood. While the Old Testament in the Bible has seen Christians move forward, Islam remains mired in the 7th century. The example of Muhammad is that Islam is a religion of peace when Muslims do not have the power and numbers on their side. Once they do, things change. Many Muslims are peaceful and do not want to believe the Quran in what it actually says, literally. Some just ignore harsher passages. The violent verses of the Quran have played a key role in very real massacre and genocide. This includes the brutal slaughter of tens of millions of Hindus for 5 centuries, beginning around 1000 AD with Mahmud of Ghazni's bloody conquest. Both he and the later Tamerlane Islam's Genghis Khan slaughtered an untold number for merely trying to defend their temples from destruction. Buddhism was nearly wiped off the Indian subcontinent. Judaism and Christianity met the same fate in areas controlled by Muslim armies, including the Middle East, North Africa, and parts of Europe, including today's Turkey. Violence is so ingrained in Islam that it has never stopped being at war, either with other religions or with itself. Muhammad was a military leader, laying siege to towns, massacring the men, raping the women, enslaving their children, and taking the property of others as his own. On several occasions, Muhammad rejected offers of surrender from the besieged inhabitants and even butchered captives. Muhammad inspired his followers to battle even when they did not feel it was right to fight, promising them slaves and booty if they fought and threatening them with hell if they did not. Muhammad allowed his men to rape traumatized women captured in battle, usually on the very day their husbands and family members were slaughtered. The early Islamic principle of warfare was that the civilian population of a town was to be destroyed if they tried to defend themselves and resisted the call of Islam. One of the most respected Sunni theologians is Al-Quad Ari, who justifies terror attacks against Western targets by noting that there is no such thing as a civilian population in a time of war. Contrast that to the Islamic jihadists, who hide among innocent people, and liberals who rail against civilian casualties when America retaliates. Radical Islam does not have rules to go by, but they enjoy the uproar caused by liberals who demand that we play by rules in confronting an enemy intent on killing us. The widely respected Dictionary of Islam defines jihad as a religious war with those who are non-believers in the mission of Muhammad. It is an incumbent religious duty established in the Quran as a divine institution. The strangest and most untrue thing that can be said about Islam is that it is a religion of peace. Obama repeats the lie ad nauseum. If every standard by which the West is judged and condemned, like slavery, imperialism, intolerance, misogyny, or warfare, were applied equally to Islam, the verdict would be devastating. Islam never gives up what it conquers, be it religion, culture, language, or life. It is the least open to dialogue and the most self-absorbed. It is convinced of its own perfection, yet brutality shuns self-examination and represses criticism, even threatening the lives of anybody who would question them. That's what gives the Quran's verses of violence and makes them so dangerous. They are given the weight of divine command. While Muslim terrorists take them as literally as anything else in their holy book, they understand that Islam is incomplete without jihad. Moderates offer little to contradict them. Speaking peace and love may win over the ignorant, but when every 12th verse of Islam's holiest book either speaks to Allah's hatred for non-Muslims or calls for their death, forced conversion, or subjugation, it's little wonder that sympathy for terrorism runs as deeply as it does in the broader Islamic community. In 1991, a Palestinian couple in America was convicted of stabbing their daughter to death for being too westernized. A family friend excoriated the jury for not understanding the culture, claiming the father was merely following the religion, and saying that the couple had to discipline their daughter or lose respect. These honor killings happen far more often than you might expect. In 2011, unrepentant Palestinian terrorists responsible for the brutal murders of civilians, women, and children, explicably in the name of Allah, were treated to a luxurious holy pilgrimage to Mecca by the Saudi king, without a single Muslim voice raised in protest. The most prestigious Islamic university in the world today is Cairo's Al-Azhar. While the university is quick to condemn secular Muslims who critique Islam, it has never condemned ISIS as a group of infidels, despite horrific carnage in the name of Allah. When asked why, the university's grand imam, Ahmed Al-Talib, said, "Al-Azhar cannot accuse any Muslim of being an infidel as long as he believes in Allah and the last day, even if he commits every atrocity." That is the mentality of even the educated Muslim world. For their part, Western liberals would do well not to sacrifice critical thinking to the god of political correctness, or to look at other religions down to the level of Islam merely to avoid the truth that this is both different and dangerous. There are just too many Muslims who take the Quran literally, and too many others who couldn't care less about the violence done in the name of Islam. Given the increasing level of violence and the death confronting us today, I'm trying to tell you things that the liberal mainstream media will not tell you. The problem with Islam is not so much bad people as bad ideology. Islamic terrorists have carried out more than 28,000 attacks since 9/11. From just this March 19th to the 25th of March, 6 days, there have been 25 attacks, 204 killed, and 395 people injured by zealots praising Allah and acting in His name. When someone shows you who they are, believe them. I'll give you particular verses from the Quran in a moment, but let's look at quotes from Barack Obama concerning Islam. He said, "The future should not belong to those who slander the prophet of Islam," completely ignoring the history of violence and death from that prophet, Muhammad. Obama said, "We will convey our deep appreciation for the Islamic faith, which has done so much of the centuries to shape the world, including my own country," he said. But what have they done? Any shaping of the world by Islam has come in the form of violence and terror. As a student of history, I know civilization's debt to Islam, Obama said. But Obama's history has been taught to him by radical communists and socialists whose distorted view of Islam causes Obama to be blind to Islam's history. Civilization owes no debt to Islam. On the contrary, Islam owes a debt to civilization. Obama said that Islam is not part of the problem in combating violent extremism. It is an important part of promoting peace, he said. So when does that promotion of peace begin? Islam promotes Islam, and it's the greatest component in violent extremism. Barack Obama has said that in ancient times and in our times, Muslim communities have been at the forefront of innovation and education. But name me one thing that Muslims have innovated or discovered in the past 500 years. As for education, young Muslims are taught to hate non-believers from birth, just as Obama himself was educated in Muslim communities. Obama has said that Islam has a proud tradition of tolerance. How ignorant is that statement? Islam is completely intolerant of any other religion. They are commanded to kill, in the name of Allah, anyone who will not follow Islam. Why do you think these Islamic jihadists all shout, "Allahu Akbar, God is great," as they slaughter innocent people in the name of Allah, subjugate women to the status of animals, and throw gays to their death off of tall buildings for being gay? What's tolerant about drowning people in cages or burning them alive, crucifying children for the sake of spreading terror? One thing that Obama said is coming true, in large parts because of his efforts, is that whatever we once were, we are no longer a Christian nation. Did you hear that? When Obama was asked what his definition of sin is, he said with a straight face, "It's being out of line with my values." Over the past 7 years, Obama has never one time refuted the claims or comments made about him being the liberal savior. In the 2007-2008 run for election, Oprah Winfrey repeatedly called Obama the one. And then Obama said, "I think that the difficult thing about any religion, including Christianity, is that at some level there is a call to evangelize. There's the belief, certainly in some quarters, that people haven't embraced Jesus as their personal Savior, that they are going to hell. But listen to the Quran, chapter 3, verse 56. As to those who reject faith, I will punish them with terrible agony in this world and in the hereafter." Chapter 9, verses 38 and 39. This is a warning to those who refuse to fight, that they will be punished with hell. I could go on and on with verses from the Quran. Let me make something perfectly clear. Muslims have the right to free speech just as I do, just as you do, and I do not cast aspersions upon those who follow Islam. If they truly believe in Allah and the Quran, they are free to do so. But the God I worship and my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, do not command me to kill those who are non-believers of Christianity, nor does my Christian Bible, the Bible of Islam, the Quran, does. It calls for the death of non-believers of Islam again and again. That is what I speak out against, not Muslims just because they are Muslims. It is clear that we cannot fund a useful idiot who departs from the values they were taught at home. Obviously, I'd be surprised if something happened in my own family, but the forces of communism, socialism, and liberalism are louder in America than at any time in our history. Frankly, I feel sorry for kids today who have to leave home into that environment. We must love our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, support them, encourage them to use their time to get a greater education, and then to use that knowledge not only to succeed in life, but to help others along the way. Our young people are our future, but that future is in great, great jeopardy. Carl?
Yes, sir. Thank you for a good commentary there, and we'll be back with Tom in just a moment. We're going to take time out for an important word, and we'll be right back.
North Carolina is on the move. Jobs are coming back. People are moving here, and businesses want to locate here. One company, CSX, wants to build a major transportation facility right here in eastern North Carolina, providing jobs to hundreds of people. The project will attract other job creators too, thousands of new jobs right here in eastern North Carolina. Jobs for North Carolina workers. The CSX project will transform this region, energize our community, and make all of North Carolina proud. Let's give CSX a North Carolina welcome. Like all of us, CSX wants to be here too. And why wouldn't they? North Carolina is on the move. Paid for by the North Carolina Chamber.
Well, let's go back now to the man on the go, the man in the know, my friend, your friend, Tom Joyner.
Carl, I hope that my point was made today on several subjects that we broached. I would return to what happened this weekend when Chris Wallace interviewed Barack Obama for the first time on Fox since he was elected. He's stayed away from Fox News. But at that time, Chris Wallace asked him if he had talked to the FBI about the case with Hillary Clinton's emails. And Obama said no, he had not talked with him. Well, I expected him to say that. I doubt that he has. He has other people who can do that for him. But then he turned around and completely talked to the FBI on television. He told the FBI and the American people that Clinton had done nothing wrong. She would never intentionally harm the country, and on in defense of Clinton. A clear message to the FBI that Barack Obama does not want them to come in with an indictment of Hillary Clinton. Every American should be extremely angry about that. He could very easily have said there's an ongoing examination, investigation by the FBI into this matter, and it would be inappropriate for me to say anything on that matter. I will not answer questions. I will not comment on it at all. That would have been the way to answer it. But he followed his usual course and basically instructed the FBI, hey, don't come in here with an indictment. There'll be repercussions. That's dangerous.
Absolutely. And Tom, we got 2 or 3 minutes left on the clock up there. One of the things that astounded me today and is the fact that the people in Colorado must be livid over the fact their vote doesn't seem to make any difference and their vote has been taken away from them. And that is not the American way. And I think as I look at this situation, the fix must be in. I have heard Brother Carl Gallup's talk extensively four or five weeks ago about the fact that Ted Cruz could never be elected president of the United States because of his parents were not American. I think one was an American citizen, but the other was not. And clearly by the rules that they have today, Carl Gallup said that would not be efficient. It seems to me that Hillary had rather run against Ted Cruz, that's my speculation, had rather run against Ted Cruz than against Donald Trump.
Carl, the establishment, Republican establishment, and the media, and of course the Democrats, will turn against Ted Cruz if they are successful in destroying Donald Trump. They will then turn and try to take Cruz out because Cruz is saying some of the same things that that Trump is saying, in that he will shake up Washington, that the system is corrupt, that it's rotten to its core, and that he's going to make all these changes. The establishment does not want that. They spent years and years, decades, building these nests for themselves and controlling things. The people of Colorado have a right to be incensed. And there are protests, by the way, beginning in Colorado. Suppose you went out and stood in the cold for 10 minutes or 5 hours because you believe that your vote counts. And then they tell you that they're not going to listen to any vote. They're going to do it themselves. They're going to determine who gets the delegates from a given state. I don't see how our republic can continue to exist if we allow that to continue.
Well, I think the people in America, one avenue left for all of us is the avenue of prayer. But we've got to start standing up as people and telling our government enough is enough. And when will the American people come alive and realize that this country is being taken away from them? The Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and a lot of people protest and do not know anything about the Constitution. They do not know anything about the Bill of Rights. And so, but yet they have an opinion, and their opinion is all that matters.
That's all that matters, Carl. And speaking of prayer, obviously we have to turn to prayer. It's really our only hope. But with the increasing numbers of people who have turned their back on God, vocally and physically, is it any wonder that we are seeing storms, tornadoes, tsunamis, fires, all of the things that we were told about in Revelations, if you'll read it, and if you're not a Bible believer, use it as a history book. Look at what they were telling you way back thousands of years ago, and compare it to what we're seeing in our lives today. We've got some awakening to do, Carl.
We surely do. And our good friend Carl Gallup's down in Florida. We have him on frequently. He is an authority on Revelation, and we'll have his, we'll probably have him on in the next day or two. But Tom, you're one of the best. I certainly love to work with you and work for you and work to help you get your message out. And all people should listen to you very carefully, because you've got a message, and I think you got your heart into it. You believe every word. I believe as you believe. So come back real soon, and bring us the truth when you come back.
Well, God gave me an ability to put my thoughts together and to voice them, Carl, and I'm going to voice them as long as I live. God bless America.